From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the governor and comptroller announced the state is $2.3 billion in debt. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on that and the battle lines being drawn over Amazon coming to New York City. And the first woman police chief has been sworn in at SUNY New Paltz. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state's comptroller delivered some bad news this week. The state has a $2.3 billion budget deficit. Cuomo blames a decline on federal tax changes that he says penalizes blue states, but there are other factors at play, too. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt explains.
Cuomo, along with Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, says they are sounding the alarm after reviewing the results of the January quarterly estimated tax payments. Cuomo says the collections are even worse than anticipated.
$2.3 billion as a drop at this point in revenues is as serious as a heart attack.
Comptroller DiNapoli says it's the biggest hit to the state's finances in some time.
This is the most serious revenue shock that the state has faced in many years. We can't say that enough or emphasize that enough. That $2.3 billion figure, frankly, Governor, I think could get worse before it gets better.
Cuomo blames the deficit on changes made to the federal tax code in 2017 by President Trump and the then Republican-led Congress. The code now limits the ability to deduct state and local taxes from federal income taxes. Those changes adversely affect states like New York with relatively high state and local taxes. The higher tax states are also largely Democratic, and the governor has said for months now that he believes the blue states were unfairly targeted.
What is galling about this to me is it's all politics.
The governor concedes that other factors also led to the deficit, including the big drop in the stock market in December, which is the major factor in the lower-than-expected January estimated tax payments. The decrease could also affect the amount of money traders receive in their annual Wall Street bonuses, which the state relies on for a portion of its tax revenues. Cuomo says as a result, the spending plan he proposed just 3 weeks ago is now unsupportable. But he is not at this time proposing specific spending cuts or delays in a planned middle-class tax cut, saying he needs to consult with the legislature first. Many Democrats in the legislature, including several newly elected state senators, favor imposing new, higher tax brackets for New York's richest residents as a means to pay for new programs. The state already imposes an income tax surcharge on New Yorkers who make more than $1 million a year. Cuomo warns against adding additional tax tiers to the wealthy.
We have the second highest millionaire's tax in the United States of America. And you have some people saying we should be number one. Raise taxes even more. This is the flip side. Tax the rich, the rich leave. And now what do you do?
The governor says he has heard that some wealthy New Yorkers might be moving their permanent residence to a different state, but at this point he has no hard numbers. Members of the legislature say they are not yet as worried about the potential gap as the governor and the comptroller are. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie agrees that the changes to the federal tax code have hurt New York, but he says it's too early to tell how disruptive the effect might be.
I think it's still a little too early to determine what we can and can't do. Like I said, I still want to see what this is. Is this just a blip? Is it just a delay? And I think when we find out what's the real cause behind the reductions in revenues, then I think we can make a more formative opinion on where we go from here.
Democrats in the legislature have said they favor spending more money on education and other programs. And the speaker says Assembly Democrats continue to believe the state can afford the additional spending.
The Assembly's priorities are always going to continue to be trying to get resources to our communities, particularly education and health care. Those commitments will never change.
Some economists are predicting that a national recession may be beginning, but the governor's budget director, Robert Mojica, disagrees. But Mojica says while his analysts are not forecasting a recession, they do believe, based on the new numbers, that the state is in the midst of an economic slowdown. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state's controller sat together to deliver the bad news. The state is $2.3 billion in debt, Alan.
Well, David, let's face it. He's been telling us this in our conversations from day one. He's been saying this was designed to screw over, can't think of a better term, the blue states, California, New York. And as a result, there are a lot of people, and he knows it and he says it, who are going to protect their assets by moving to states with lower state and local property taxes or none, where they can keep their money. I don't like it. I live in Massachusetts. I work in New York. I'm taxed in New York. I'm taxed in Massachusetts. But I have to say, I understand what these people are thinking. And there doesn't seem to be much that he can do about it except to sort of cry over it and to say the president has achieved what he wanted to achieve here.
We're reading now stories, and we've been talking about it all along, about the deal for Amazon to set up a New York campus meeting resistance now. The governor on one side, newly emboldened Democrats in the state Senate, specifically Senator Michael Gianaris of Queens, chosen for a board that could kill the deal.
Well, you know, David, we've had Mike Gianaris on our air a lot. He's an extraordinary legislator. Of course, it's his district, and people are going to be displaced. And you can expect that a guy who represents his constituents as well as Gianaris does is going to be against the deal. It may be that better terms can be arrived at than the ones that the governor and the mayor have endorsed. There'll be people displaced. There's going to be a lot going on. Gianaris has to do something. It's interesting because this could portend a gloves-off fight between the state Senate and Cuomo. And there have been a few intimations that that could happen. Andrea Stewart Cousins is an incredible leader. She's made it clear from the very beginning that she's her own person, that the legislature is a different branch of government, and that they are going to be looking at each thing that they're doing. Now, I think one of the things that is driving this bus a little bit is the fact that Cuomo is so interested in doing all these progressive things that he doesn't share the credit. He doesn't let them pass their bills. He puts it in the budget or he announces it's going to happen. And there does seem to be a little animus building up here over all of that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government, politics. I'm David Gustina. The first woman to be chief of the University Police Department at the State University of New York at New Paltz was sworn in this month. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spoke with Mary Ridiak about her new role.
Mary Ridiak was sworn in February 1st.
I mean, it feels awesome. You know, it's great to show that, you know, other women in this agency that I, you know, you can do it. You keep your nose to the grindstone and you just show what you're capable of doing. And that gets you up the ranks, you know, and it's just the work that you do. So it's nice to show those, you know, that minority in the department. You know, you see the stats. It's like, what, 15% are women. So it's nice to reach this point and then mentor other females coming up the ring. I went to a training, Women in Leadership, in the Association of Police Chiefs, and it was just women. And a big thing was, you break that glass ceiling, you need to pull the other women up through it. So it was a great comment and a great way to think of it.
During her speech to an audience that included the Ulster County Sheriff and a number of local law enforcement officials, Rydiak credited her father's advice with getting her into the field.
I would also like to thank my family here today, to my father, who told me one day long ago, take the civil service test, you never know. What do you got to lose? And a state job is a good gig, so speaking firsthand.
She had served as deputy chief in the University Police Department since 2013, adding interim police chief to her responsibilities in May, when Chief David Dugatkin stepped down. SUNY New Paltz President Dr. Donald Christian.
Of the SUNY University police chiefs currently, she's one of three women chiefs, and the first on our campus, the first woman leader on our campus. And you know, the significance there is that 88% of law officers, police officers around the country, across all agencies, are men, and a very small percentage of them are of the leadership are women, 3%, I think, something like that.
In her role as chief, Rydiak leads a newly accredited department of 22 sworn members and 6 civilian employees.
It's a tough line of work, and you know, you just keep going and you push through those problems and those issues that you may have, or you know, and then it's just a different role that you have within the department, and you kind of seem a little different, but you also have to show that you do the job the same way anybody else does, you know, and gender has nothing to do with it. You can go toe-to-toe with these people and still come out on top.
She says women are generally seen as more approachable.
We're seen more open, more my door's open, you can come chat with me, people feel more comfortable, I'm not big and muscular, you know, and even our officers who try to downplay that because they want people to come and approach them, but I think it's an approachable thing, you know, and I like that, you know, I like that people can feel like they can come to me, oh, that's a chief, you know, you can't talk to her, but you can, you know, you can see me walking across campus and say, I got a parking ticket, what the heck, you know.
President Christian speaks to what he sees as some of the challenges for the police chief.
Social media, the frustration that a lot of our students feel with national events that are sort of beyond their control, and yet they're issues that students care deeply about, and so they're finding ways that they can explore those issues and voice their views on them. We work really hard across the entire campus to try to build a strong sense of community where we respect difference and we navigate differences. University police play a key educational role in dealing with young people, and young people make mistakes, and that's part of the reason that being a university police officer is such a special role and special challenge, because they're educators, they're working with a special population, and yet they need to be prepared as any other police officer is to do the things that police officers are called on to do.
Rydiak says it can be challenging to make the school students understand she and her department are there to help them.
We're not here to stifle them. We're not present at a protest to take a stance on one side. It's really to let them protest, but not get hurt. And you may get a counter protest that may have a different agenda than what you're just trying to say. So it's just trying to maintain the safeness, but also have them. This is college. This is where you do those things where you get that first feeling of, I want to do something about something in protest or bring it to somebody's attention. So we're here to help you do that in the best way you can, and not let it go awry and turn into something that turns unsafe for the community, not just for the protesters, but the people who work here and go to school here. You know, we want them to be able to do that, and we want to support that. So some people, they see us and they're like, oh, you're going to shut us down. You know, you don't want us to protest because you don't like the thought of the protest or what we're protesting about. It's nothing to do with the content. We're just here to make you, you know, let you voice that.
SUNY New Paltz's student newspaper, the New Paltz Oracle, published an editorial January 31st entitled Chief Rydiak Carries the Torch for Future Female Leaders. Rydiak began her career in 1998 at the New York State University Police at SUNY Purchase, transferred to New Paltz in 2000, was promoted to University Police Investigator in 2003, and assumed the newly created role of Deputy Chief of Police in 2013. Mary Rydiak is now Chief of the University Police Department at SUNY New Paltz, the first woman to hold the position in the department's 50-year history. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, Northeast winters can range from mild to brutal, but no matter what the weather, wear and tear on sidewalks and snowbanks at intersections around New York can present challenges for people with disabilities. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Whether traveling by wheelchair, walking with a cane, or using a guide dog, winter can make a familiar commute difficult. Blaze Bryant is an advocate for people with disabilities.
Navigating the Capital District is very, very, very tough, in part because there's not a lot of room. This is an old area, and oftentimes ice and snow gets dumped into curb cuts. This not only impacts myself as a person who is blind that uses a seeing eye dog, it impacts people who use white canes, it impacts wheelchair users or people who use other mobility aids to get from point A to point B, because some of these mounds are so unbelievably huge and they are right in the crosswalks, which, by the way, that is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It is part of the reason why curb cuts were installed in the first place.
Disability Rights New York filed a lawsuit in January in U.S. District Court on behalf of two residents against the city of Troy. Cheryl Seaton and Moses Lugo are suing the city for failing to maintain accessible sidewalks, curb cuts, and pedestrian crossings in violation of Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Sim Goldman is supervising attorney at Disability Rights New York.
Troy, like a lot of older cities, has infrastructure, streets, and sidewalks that are not accessible to people with disabilities. Cobblestones, lack of curb ramps, heaved pavers on the sidewalks, all make it an obstacle course for folks who have mobility impairments of many kinds, including using wheelchairs, people who are blind, people who use canes, and walkers. It prevents them from enjoying the benefits of downtown and other parts of Troy that others take for granted. It puts them in danger by requiring them to walk or wheel in the road, often in busy streets, because they cannot access the sidewalks.
The suit points to snow and ice buildup on sidewalks, coupled with broken sections of sidewalk in summer and certain intersections lacking curb cuts, saying both Seaton and Lugo suffered injuries and broken wheelchairs. Cities like Albany and Troy ask property owners to keep sidewalks clear, or they may be fined. Owners whose properties are on corners are also responsible for seeing to it that pedestrians don't have to jump over snowbanks to cross streets. But that doesn't always happen. Bryant deals with obstacles on a daily basis.
People need to shovel their sidewalks, and if they're not able to shovel their sidewalks, this is where we need to come together as a community.
Mayor Patrick Madden replied to a request for comment by email saying, quote, "Since the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990, no city administration has been more committed to improving accessibility for Troy residents of all ages and abilities. We have made meaningful progress with the assistance of local disability advocates and organizations and remain fully committed to this important effort." Goldman says Troy needs to show goodwill and come to an agreement with a clear time to fix what he calls a myriad of problems.
We know it's not going to happen tomorrow or in 60 days, but we do need a plan. It could be over a period of a couple of years to address these issues.
You can read the lawsuit at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The North Country Chamber of Commerce has released its annual Business Confidence Index for the region, and it comes as the region receives a high ranking from a national economics research firm. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Every year, the North Country Chamber asks its members their opinion on national and New York State issues. The survey also asks whether businesses expect to grow compared to the previous year. Chamber officials use the responses to create the Business Confidence Index. This year, Chamber President and CEO Gary Douglas says the top federal concern was keeping economic partnerships with Canada stable.
The top question we asked was, do you agree that the U.S.-Canada relationship is working for the North Country and must be supported and preserved as a key to the North Country's current and future economy? Statistically, we had a 100% response because everybody answered yes except for one individual. Maybe they misread the question, who knows. But it gives us a reaffirmation in the strongest possible terms we could imagine of the understanding of how important that relationship is. 97% agree that Congress should approve the updated NAFTA agreement, that needs to be approved by Congress at the earliest opportunity, bringing stability and predictability to the U.S.-Canada economic partnership.
At the state level, the survey found 92% of respondents want the tax cap made permanent. Douglas says tax relief is a priority, along with workforce development.
We asked them to rank their various concerns and issues. Number one, I have to say it was number one by a wide margin, was more support for workforce development and training. Number two, we have a tie, state support to help close cell phone service gaps and avoid additional mandates on employers. And then number three, make the 2% property tax cap permanent.
After outlining the issues business owners are concerned about, Chamber executives unveiled the 2019 Business Confidence Index.
We have the unveiling, please. 96%. A little bit of a positive shift amongst those expecting their business to go up from 75% to 79%. They did actually find a way to being even a little more optimistic and a little more confident about the future.
Micropolitan areas have at least one urban center with an overall population between 10,000 and 50,000. The Development Corporation President Paul Grasso explained the Florida-based independent economic research firm Polycom has placed Plattsburgh among the top 50 of the 551 such areas across the country.
Plattsburgh was ranked 40th among those areas. But the real important thing is that we're ranked number one in the state of New York. So there are 14 areas in the state. We are ranked number one. And they base it on economic strength. And they define economic strength as a long-term tendency of an area to consistently grow in size and quality. And they look at not annual rankings. They look at the data over a 20-year period. And so they just see whether or not you're able to sustain that growth. And there's not just one event that comes in that makes you pop out.
Grasso says this type of ranking is a crucial element in recruiting new business and industry to the region.
It's a very competitive industry, economic development, and so you need to use every competitive advantage that you have. And being able to explain to a potential employer that this independent third party has rated this area as having the greatest economic strength in New York State for a micropolitan area, it's huge. It gives them a level of confidence that if they move here, you know, they're going to be supported, things are going to happen. This area is strong in economic development.
Among the top 100 national micropolitan areas ranked by Polycom, Barrie, Vermont is 17th, Keene, New Hampshire, 50th, Batavia, New York, 64th, and Oneonta, New York, 74th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1906, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.